Jesus and everybody in Jesus and
there was a pretty tough old place, so it was tolerant school days with a lot of people after. That was tough.
That's not wrong.
See how we work this city so close to the mic.
Many fantastic things in the exhibition. I mean, it would be hard to choose something. And I thought the Quidditch section, I mean, just looking at the props, and of course, we've been privileged to be working with these items for years, but you know, to see them in somewhere like this, it makes you realise just how important they are now and how they do seem as if they are real in a sense, not in the sense of being real props, because they are, but it's as if they're from a real sport in days gone by. In the way that they are there at the exhibition. So, I was just amazed as well about the atmosphere they've created here. It's not just some props in some cases. You just feel like you're walking into, you know, the world of Harry Potter and Hogwarts. So it was very, very interesting. And, especially for us, we're the filmmakers and the past members, you know, we're used to seeing all this stuff, and it was exciting.
Actually, I think there's detail there that we didn't see, but it's just part of the fabric of the sets. And the graphics department, the art department, that open it up, but the things like that, there's an awful lot of detail that even we don't see everything all the time.
Or something. I always want to have this class. The prop inside the hut. The prop makers had to go and make one that was 3/4 size. So I used to have an enormous fun running around the side and I think I'm going to lean against this mantelpiece. Not the metal jugs, not touch the metal jugs.
It does help because if you imagine yourself in any sort of situation that your son, in this case, your child would be in danger, your protective quality, your protective characteristic would come up enormously. And the duplicitness that women have so naturally, so often, it lends itself to acting, and I find marvelously. You could also see, so it's not a sort of, I'm protecting my son, and it's really, really obvious, the challenge, and we haven't seen it, so I don't know how it could be portrayed, is to protect your son without anybody noticing. So, my children are very, very young. They're sort of 3 and 4, so I don't really have a sort of a relationship like that. No. It's much more, it's of course mummy can fly, darling, get into bed,
Experience helps you. Again. very disappointed with me. It's obviously been in a very positive sort of brings you to a wider audience. It's I find it rather nicer to be famous for children rather than drug addicts and rapists and psychopaths and murderers and serial killers and paedophiles. I've all played those. So it's yeah, it's wonderful. But actually, it's not the first children. I've actually done quite a few children. I've done Black Beauty and I did Dinotopia and Dragon Heart and all before this. So I'm always very interested in kids films for kids because I love them so very much. It's just very nice to be so adored by children, I think. Yeah, lovely, lovely family all the time.
Someone else?
Well, my favorite thing is just terrible jokes. He went through the teenage never about 3 years ago. He decided to stand up comedian. He tell me jokes that my father told me about 50 years ago. It was terribly funny. It was so earnest. He's always been terribly earnest. He's trying to get it right, hasn't he?
Yes.
And he was like, I love this one. And I go, okay.
He does say he's got a great knowledge of music. And for 2 Christmases ago, I really decided that I've got to stop listening to the Stones and Dylan. Sort of try and blurt to myself listening to the 20th and 21st century. And he was fantastic and wrote lists and lists of brilliant albums, all of which my husband owns now, which was part of a Christmas present. So that was very interesting. He's a real music. He's a
real music.
He's passionate.
He is.
Yeah.
It's just fun, generally speaking. I can't obviously not the same thing every day, but I can't really think of a single incident with which to illuminate this conversation, but he's just fun and funny, and he's so interested in everything and everybody, and he's really brilliant. He's a leader on the set because he's really motivated to make anybody who's new, either in crew or cast terms, just make them feel comfortable and settle in as if they're part of the family that developed over the years. And he's a really, really impressive young man. He's also very funny and loves to joke around and loves to laugh.
So let's stop making things up now.
I completely agree with David. I mean, I get on late in the films, and I saw Dan. I came in for my first ever costume fitting, and he introduced himself to me. And then I saw him again 3 weeks later, and he came straight up to me, say, "Hi, Freddie, how are you doing? You completely remember my name, exactly everything." He meets, hundreds of people all the time, constantly. And he will still remember your name and everything. It's really quite amazing. Just such a lovely guy.
And I remember when we were doing this scene where he changes into eight different Harris. And the first AP slapped him about something wasn't going right. And about 30 minutes later, apologised. He says, "Sorry, Dan, it's been a bit of a long week. So I really apologise for this long week." And Dan came straight back saying, "It's been a long adolescence, mate."
That's funny to mention that that sequence is documented on a DVD, isn't it?
It is indeed. That's right.
So the camera's rolled, Chris in action, and walks out from my sort of like that, and Daniel stood there for a second and just burst out laughing. He's just a brilliant, brilliant lad to work with, and he's done so well, and just to have got through all of these films and been so consistent, it's just quite an achievement.
Yeah, well, growing up, we all forget.
And it's also really nice to say it genuinely, because so often you've made films and somebody's like, what do you like to work with you? Extraordinary individual.
I don't think anything's possible. You'd have to talk to Warner Brothers about that, the specifics of that. I would say there aren't that many deleted scenes. If you go over the history of all eight films, I think you might find there's a disappointingly small number of deleted scenes. We've been quite economic about using what we shot. There are one or two really juicy, lovely moments, but there's not.
It's only about the handwritten next scenes. I was on the plane on the way over here, and the guy sitting on my left was watching the movie, not realizing I was right next to him. Natalie was right behind him, and Bobby was two rows behind him. the one who was on the plane earlier, that's the great film. That was sleeping up to me, and Bobby was nearly sleeping. I thought the great film was came and just.
Brings it home to you sometimes as well, because you're living your life in a farm.
city, just down the road there. I heard the car and she screamed at me like the Beatles or something. There's, I'm looking back and is George Clooney turned up or something? Because they just so love the films, they're so involved in the whole business of it. You know, they know every single character and all their relationships, and it's a whole world. It's just quite extraordinary. It's not like enthusiasm.
And as you said, it's a happy, it's a joyful enthusiasm.
Exactly.
Because until you've been on a red carpet, it can be a very, I remember when I was pregnant, it can be a very, it feels quite violent. People go, it's not nice. It's like being screamed at. You know, whether actually what's really nice about the Harry Potter films, that the people that actually feel like very nice, is that, you know, that people actually, there's a very happy atmosphere. People are like jolly and kind of, you know, as you say, that kind of, you know,
it's
the rain and smiling, and it's like, thank you very much. It isn't that sort of, you know.
Yeah. I think, like, that's what's so nice about all these, like, the premieres we go to, you know, Japan, all the places in Scandinavia and there, and just, you know, they can't speak our language. You don't know what they're saying, but you just say Harry Potter, and faces light up, people love it. And, it's just, it's the support, it's the same everywhere we go. You know, just like the longer you're there, and people recognize it. Like, you were here the last 5 years, yes. You know, it's cool. I've actually got a funny story. Kind of, when I was working for the London premiere, it wasn't at the London premiere, but I was just walking along the street, and I saw a sticker of myself on the pavement, just there. And I walked past, I was like, no. And I walked back, and it was actually me. And I was there for a few days because we were doing the premiere, we did a bit of press. And every day I walk past myself on the pavement.
Well, you know you've made it when you're stuck on the pavement.
That's what David Aiden was saying yesterday, particularly the Great Hall. You completely forgot it was a set after a while. It was like,
what's going on? Don't
go away. Yeah, it's quite true that you can remember. You get physically familiar with the sets to the point that it is like being in your house or something. And it's very odd because I've never had this, I've never done anything. It was 10 years of work, you know.
I think it's unique for that reason because every other film you do. They, of course, tear the sets down as soon as they finish with. And very little was demolished when we finished with here because we didn't even know what Joe was writing next. So I guess nothing was taken down immediately.
No, I mean, we leave everything up that we could leave up, and the things we did take down, we used a technique called pack striking where they tried to take it set apart as a kit of parts so that it would be limbs up in a corner, in a leaky corner, might not have been in a film before. Well, three or four films actually, it was there and it was available to be reinstated if it was needed, so everything was kept.
Did you ever ask her kind of for predictions of what she was going to write to see if you could totally strike what's set?
It was never really necessary. No, we actually just said we kept everything pretty much. No, I mean, there's some sets, I can't think what now, but there were things that you knew just by nature of the story that they were one offs that they're basically never going back to, but anything that there was any doubt about, because we were no better informed than anybody else as to what was coming up in the books that had not yet been published.
change with SD players sometimes in on little snippets of information, but she obviously didn't trust us to not be in the pub on a Friday night and say, oh, we never guess what. So she kept it to herself, and so we didn't ever know really what was coming up. And you know, for the fifth one, we took Creature out, and she read the script. We work on the script and developed them with Steve Clavis, and then we were happy we'd give them to Joe to read just for her seal of approval before we started filming. And she just rang up and said, I see you taking Creature out. And we said, yeah, absolutely, there's not enough time to explore his story and whatever. We can deliver the information in a different way. And she said, I wouldn't do that if I were you. And that was all we knew. So yeah, we just kept everything.
Too much in it, but I think there is a sense in the last movie that there's everyone coming together for the big cause. I think, if anything, Cormac kind of highlights, if there is a negative side to Gryffindor, it's the kind of that arrogance maybe that you can get with being a Gryffindor. But I think in the end, you've got everyone battling against Voldemort, so yeah, I think there's a sense of that, but otherwise it's not too much. I think still it's a bit of a novelty.
We felt it was really important to bring back as many people as we possibly could, because it's the end of an era, really. It's the final film, but it's also the end of this phenomenon, that's a unique phenomenon that occurred with the Harry Potter franchise. And so there are people who come back who we might not have seen for several films, and they often only have sort of cameo appearances, but it just felt good to try and sort of mark the occasion with as many of the cast as we possibly could.
Yeah, it shows all the Wizarding World working together. Like, there's not all these individual scenes, there's not everyone having a big moment, you know, but everyone's there at the same time. They're all battling, and it shows that they let go of all their whatever things they had, tensions between them. They just are fighting for. And I think that's what it is in the book, and yeah, it's really spectacular.
And our last question for this session from Emily.
I remember it was cold, but I don't know how much I can say without getting into loads of trouble, so I'm just going to say it now.